Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation, on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I call your name, the echo is haunting, the echo is always the same. I call your name, the echo is haunting, an echo can never be changed, so I call your name, your name.
Join in, give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. The number here is 888-627-6008. Many of you have sent in emails with some questions, and we'll be getting to those as well. Before we get started, not much to tell you in terms of announcements. There are some seats still available for the retreat coming up in October in California. So the details are on the website. I think last I checked, there were about 10 or 12 seats left. So if you have any thoughts about going, probably better to book it now. I'll tell you about one webinar that's coming up in September with Dr. Piero Calvi-Parisetti, who's a medical doctor, and he'll be doing a webinar called Bases for the Irrational Belief in the Afterlife. He's an afterlife scholar in addition to being a medical doctor, and he'll tell us about the evidence, you know, for life after death. So let's get into those who sent us some questions in advance, and some of them are quite interesting. Brad writes, we lost our young grandson, and I have researched and cannot find an answer to if he is able to come through on his own, or someone will bring him through to be with or around us in our dreams. Does he hear us when we talk to him, or is someone acting as a mother or father figure and teaching him what he would be taught here? I know his medical conditions are gone now, but does a spirit grow up faster, or does he grow up as he would on earth under the guidance of our family's past loved ones and brought around when we call his name or have special events in his name? Will he learn to understand us as he ages, just as he would learn to communicate here on earth? There's a lot of questions, you know, there, and they're all, you know, good ones. You know, it's an interesting question, I think, in terms of can your grandson, you know, come around on his own, or does he need help? I think we all need help in certain degrees. I think adults that pass over need help. We're thrust into this new environment. So it's very likely that your grandson has the help that he needs. And that could, I know lots of times when a young person crosses over, people worry, well, he didn't know his relatives, you know, on the other side, who's helping him. And the answer seems to be that there are many people, even if you don't have a deceased immediate family member on the other side, that's their job, is to help those who cross over. So I think that in answer to that question, and then again, your grandson could be, in terms of a soul, he could be a very old soul, and he could be helping others as opposed to, you know, others helping him, you know, so there's a lot of things there. Do you guys have any comments about, you know, his medical things that he had in the physical, and, you know, what he's experiencing now?
I don't, you know, I think all medical issues are gone completely. And what I would like to think is that when we drop this physical body, that we wear in this realm, we're pure spirit, and that pure spirit that was the grandson came from the same place as his parents, his grandparents, and everyone that's considered to be in his family and beyond. And I don't think we necessarily should attribute what happens to us as humans the same way, because now he's a spirit entity. And everything that happens on this human physical plane are all the those trappings that we associate with the human experience. But now he's having a pure spiritual experience, which I think must be amazing.
Yeah, I think so. Again, the spirit's eternal. So it was around for thousands, around for eternity, but thousands of years before it got here, and it'll be thousands of years after it leaves. So being that it was in physical very short time does not mean that it's a young soul. As Bob pointed out, a lot of souls come to the earth that are very old souls and developed souls. So that is a good point. And of course, his contract was to be here on earth for just a short period of time. So he has fulfilled that contract, and I would assume that elevates his soul. So he's a probably more advanced soul than he was when he got here. And another question that I wanted to address is, well, if we talk to him and call him by name and do things to honor him, will he hear it? And I would say absolutely yes. He will receive the love that you send his way. And if you call him, he will come and hear what you have to say. But yes, all souls, as Bob pointed out, even if you die when you're 95, you still have to learn how to do things like lower your energy to communicate on this side or to send signs and things like that. So it is a learning process for him to reciprocate in any way. But I can say absolutely, if you send out the love and talk about him and keep him in your hearts, that will help him on the other side.
Yeah, and to address, you know, will he learn to understand us as he ages? You know, chronological age doesn't really mean anything where he is. So I think he understands you now. I don't, you know, he may need, as we just mentioned, some assistance, but I think communication has little to do with the fact, you know, that he passed it, you know, at such a young age in physical years.
And to communicate is true for anyone it crosses over. Just right. the fact that he was a young human, anyone who crosses over needs that help, the same kind of help.
Absolutely. Another question. What are your thoughts on certain smells appearing out of nowhere, smelling like our loved ones, but at times I may not be directly thinking of them at that moment. Also waking up in the middle of the night, always around 3 a.m., feeling as if she is next to me. Why are some days, this is another question, why are some days much harder than others as far as grieving? So, of course, we know the first part of that, smells are one of the commonly reported types of after-death communication. And our loved ones, we don't know how they do it, but they manifest these odors that we know we would recognize because, you know, it smells like them. And we hear all sorts of reports, right? Like somebody might have been, you know, on the other side for 3-4 years and all of a sudden they were a cigar smoker. And then all of a sudden you have this tremendous, you know, waft of cigar smoke that's unexplained. You know, it's not going to, physically, it's not going to be in the house for 3-4 years and then come with a rush like that. So I think those odors are common. And even instead, well, when I'm not thinking of them at the moment, that's when, you know, sometimes that's even more powerful. You know, when you're thinking of somebody, you might reason in your head, well, Maybe that's because I was thinking of them and I'm imagining this. But when you're not thinking of them and then you hit with that smell, that's even more convincing.
Yeah.
My firsthand knowledge of that, Melissa and I had taken a short course on developing your mediumistic tendencies or abilities. And I was going more as a curiosity because I don't feel that I'm there, and I'm definitely not there. But I was chosen to come to the head of the class, and there was another student of the class who sat next to me. And the instructor said, "Well, you know, what do you pick up from her?" And we were in a hotel room, and I immediately started smelling citrus very heavily, and I thought that the cleaning crew must have been in the next room or coming down the hall or something. And I said, "Wow, dude!" And I turned to everybody in the class, "Do you smell that? That's citrus. It smells like oranges." And nobody else smelled it except me. And so the instructor, keeping me on task here, said, "Well, what does that say to you when you get that smell of citrus?" And I said, "Well, what do you think of?" And I said, "Well, I think of Florida." And turns out that the person I was reading had just come back from Florida on a trip. So, yeah, that's how it works. And, you know, me not having any discernible mediumistic abilities, I was able to get that. The spirit was able to send me the sense of smell, and you know, that they probably knew that I could pick up on that, whereas I couldn't see them or hear them, but I could smell them.
Yeah. And the other part of that question, you know, with the waking up in the middle of the night and feeling, you know, your loved one next to you, that 3 a.m., 4 a.m. window, we've talked about this before, seems to be when most of these things tend to happen. You know, I guess it's the REM stage of sleep that we're in, but so that's also reported often. And the last part, why are some days much harder than others as far as grieving? Well, you know, I mean, Melissa, you can address that, but, you know, we know that grief comes in waves, you know, the waves ebb and flow, and that's just the nature of the beast, you know. It's kind of go with it, you know. When you need to cry, you cry, and when it lightens, you know, and it's always going to run waves. I mean, you have, Melissa, you want to talk about that a little bit?
Well, all I can say is that everyone's journey is different through grief. And Bob, you and I have talked about those famous five stages of grief, which, yes, people may experience and maybe find some sort of comfort in knowing it's been recorded that these are the different stages one goes through, but it doesn't mean it's in any sort of order, sequential order. It doesn't mean, okay, I've touched on all of them, now my grief must be gone. No, they're just going to be those good days and bad days. And if you just stay in the moment, stay focused, and be true to your grief. Don't try to shut it down. Just acknowledge it and find those. There's no one size fits all in grief. It's whatever you can find to get through your day, whatever it is. And certainly don't let anybody else tell you what your grief journey should be like, or that it should be over, or you're still grieving. Well, yeah, you're going to grieve for as long as you grieve. So I'm very sorry to say there isn't one great fix for it, but stay the course and hopefully days will get easier.
Yeah. Nancy writes, my daughter's death was ruled an accidental death. Is there such a thing? I assume, you know, that Nancy is referring to this in a spiritual sense, you know, whether or not when somebody dies, whether there was a plan, or are there really accidents? That's my assumption, but I mean, I may have, a different view of things. I mean, I think that accidents do happen. However, the other side of the coin is that, Tom mentioned before, a spiritual contract, that was fulfilled. So maybe the manner of a person's passing, is subject to free will and so forth, but maybe that was, sort of meant to be. So, I mean, what are your feelings on accidental death?
Yeah, I will adhere to that contract that you were contracted to be here X amount of years. And when those years are up and your time has come, if you're hale and hearty, then you're going to get hit by a bus, which supposedly an accident. It's in the same realm of nothing. There are no coincidences, that everything that happens. Well, this is an expression I hate to use, but everything happens for a reason. And I'm not, personally, I'm not 100% with the contract and all of that sort of thing. And as you say, free will gets in the way of some things. And yet you always seem to end up where you're supposed to be. Like the John Lennon song, there's nowhere you can be that you weren't meant to be. So if you're right there when on the train that goes derails, or on the plane that crashes, or any number of accidental ways to die, that's where you were supposed to be at the time.
Right. And before we continue, I'll just tell everybody this is The Gathering. If you wanted to join in the conversation, the number here is 888-627-6008. We're going over questions that you have sent to us. Here is one. We have been told that the afterlife contains our pets. So we know that the afterlife can contain creatures other than human beings. My question is, was the afterlife there for precursors or offshoots of Homo sapiens, such as Homo erectus and Neanderthals? It's estimated that there are 2 trillion galaxies in the universe, each containing, on average, 100 billion stars. Prior to the formation of Earth 4.3 billion years ago, was there an afterlife? And is our afterlife the same afterlife for any other sentient creatures in the universe? Okay, that's a weighty question. For the first part, you're absolutely right. The mediums bring through pets all the time. So pets, apparently, our pets are conscious entities, and then their consciousness survives, as does human consciousness. There's some question about how far that goes. Are gnats, conscious, entities with souls? I mean, I don't know where you draw the line, but certainly it seems that our domestic, pets have a soul. I mean, who knows? Maybe plants do as well. So, but in terms of what's intriguing to me, the question is, was there, an afterlife, 4.3 billion years ago? I mean, I think that for an afterlife, there has to be life. So, it's an interesting question. I mean, just because there wasn't life on Earth doesn't mean that there wasn't life in one of the other billions of galaxies. So, it's a hard concept. I would think for our planet, I think the prerequisite is that, there has to be conscious life before that consciousness can survive. So I don't see there being an afterlife here.
Well, also, and then going back to 4.3 billion, which is a very big number, but what about 5 billion or 8 billion or 10 billion? when do you get to eternity? You don't. You can go 100 billion years ago, and the soul is eternal. The soul was there then. The soul will be here 100 billion years ahead of time. And plus, time on the other side is irrelevant. So that we're talking linear terms for something that can only be described as quantum by quantum physics when we're talking about an afterlife. And your question or your point being, well, how can there be an afterlife if there wasn't a life to start with? Well, afterlife is a term that we use, and maybe it's not the best term to be using. It's just, you know, there's soul, there's your soul, and then there are your sojourns into the physical and maybe other things. And as you say, I have read books where when they talk about the soul, maybe coming back as a tree in the forest. It doesn't necessarily mean you have to be a talking, thinking individual to have a soul. I believe that if you have a life force, a life energy, you have a soul, whether you're conscious of it or not. You know, the gnats aren't conscious of it, but maybe when they get back to the other side, they go, oh, well, that was fun.
They're very happy that they escape being swatted. The other part of that is, you know, is our afterlife the same, you know, afterlife for other sentient creatures in the universe? And I guess dimensions are dimensions. You know, we're talking about planes of existence. They're there. The interpretation is different. So, you know, I mean, even now, if I was born in the Amazon, and I passed over from this world to the next, my interpretation of the afterlife is going to be, at least initially, vastly different than somebody that grew up in New York City. You know, so just imagine when you extend it out to somebody that grew up on another planet. You know, the dimension is the dimension, but it's all about they led different lives, you know, on that other planet. And I'm sure their interpretation of this other plane of existence is going to be different. So interesting questions. But here's another one. NDEers report an unconditional love when they reach the other side. Is there some way that those of us experiencing soul-crushing grief could reach across the veil to tap that love in order to help relieve the deep sadness? You know, I mean, yeah, that's what we're all about, you know, we're all trying to find ways to get glimpses of what's on the other side of that veil. And we talk about some of the ways to do that. For those who are able to reach across and get glimpses of what it's like after physical life, it does help them, you know, with their sadness, because they know that there's another, that death is not final, and that that love continues. So it makes it a lot easier. But that's kind of a set up question, because that's all what, you know, that's all our foundation does, is try to educate people, you know, to the evidence, that. And it's also, it's not only the evidence, but being open to personal experiences. You know, I mean, if you just don't believe it, you're not going to have those personal experiences.
I had recently, I'm not going to tell it right now because I'd have to tell the whole story to myself first and figure out how long of a story it really is. So I'll save that for another time, but it definitely was an experience somebody recently shared with me as their loved one crossed over, and how it was really eye-opening and heartwarming, and left the person having no fear of death and knowing that life on the other side is just purely beautiful, and that was enough comfort for her. So I'll save that story for a grief retreat.
Okay.
Right. And that answer to the direct answer to the question, you know, how can I in grief experience what an NDE-er experiences? And there is no easy, quick way, but number one, meditation. Meditation is your key to connecting with the other side. And if you put out the intention for the love and meditate on it, it can help. I'm not saying it's a fix-all, but that's one way to help. And another thing that jumps to mind is a quote that's been Wayne Dyer used to say, and I've seen it attributed to Max Planck, the mathematician, that if you change the way you look at things, the things you look at will change. So if you put yourself in the positive, healthy, loving mindset, that you'll get that back. The loving and positive vibes will come back to you. Again, yes, we've been the Forever Family Foundation for coming on 20 years, and we've been holding grief retreats, and we've been doing everything we can to try to help people alleviate the grief, and we're still searching. You know, we haven't found the magic answer. We're still looking, but there are ways to help, to ease. Whereas there's not a cure, there are some treatments.
Okay, let's go to the phone lines. I mean, we have Steve from San Francisco on the line.
Hi.
Hi, Steve.
Hi, thanks.
You had a question.
Yeah, I wrote in a question about when can your family spirit hear you and what you're saying, and when can they not hear you? And I gave four examples. Let me give you some background. I've been in this field for about 20 years with the International Ghost Hunter Society, and my wife passed away around 3 years ago, and she was very aware also. So she's done a lot of signals, and I've praised her signals and a lot of communications. So I gave four examples. Are you there? Can you hear me?
Yeah, we're here.
Okay. So the question is has to do with how can you make sure that they hear you, and when do they hear you? So the first is answer is yes, absolutely yes, she heard me. This was in, of the four examples, this was in North Carolina at a conference. I asked her to pose for an orb against the hotel bedboard, and I absolutely knew for sure that she would hear me. So I took a picture of the headboard, and then I waited and I asked her to pose for me, and I shot a picture and I got a picture of the orb. By the way, I emailed those two pictures to you. So
yeah,
I absolutely knew that she would answer me. The next would be probably yes, that she heard. So I took the camera and faced it toward the ceiling, and so that she could see the orb. And I said, "Here, Kathy, take a look. This is the picture of your orb." So I think probably she heard me. And then there's another category of no way of knowing. I set up a birthday celebration in her room. I had a candle there and an open window with curtains, and nothing happened. I talked to her a real long time, very lovingly. The candle never flickered, and the curtain never waved. So it's sort of like prayer. You have no way of knowing whether they hear you. But the fourth category is the one that's the big problem. This is when she absolutely does not hear me. And what happened this is just a couple weeks ago. I was walking down my hallway, and when I approached my son's door, he's not in the house during the pandemic, the door rattled really loudly, and it really, really scared me because I've seen too many of these paranormal movies. So I pounded right away loudly on the door. "Stop it, stop it, don't scare me." So then I left the door closed, and I walked into the other room, and I was on the computer for about an hour. And then I came back, and I walked into the hallway, and the door the door rattled again loudly, and I banged on it, and I say, stop that, stop that. And I opened up the door so that it couldn't rattle. So for about a week or two, I was afraid to walk down the hallway and get near that door. So I thought maybe it was time for me to send her on her way. So someone told me about reading the St. Joseph's Prayer and burning sandalwood. And I did all that, and I sort of got an image of her leaving. But I just don't know whether she can hear me when I'm telling her that she's got to go because she's breaking the fourth wall. She's getting too close to me and scaring me. Because once before, she crawled up against me in bed and absolutely freaked me out. Because anyone lying there in bed and all of a sudden you're grabbed by somebody would be pretty scary. So the question is, I think that she can read. I think she can read my any peril or danger I'm in, or she can read when I'm happy and she confirms the celebration. But if I want to talk to her and tell her, do not do that. I've never been able to get through to her, and I don't know whether to tell her to go on her way or not. So how do you get through to somebody?
We did get your photo, Steve. Thanks. And I was going to address some of your questions. But in terms of the first thing, your first example, where you asked her to pose, and then you received that orb, in the photo. I mean, so, and you describe it as you did that perfectly. So those are the most compelling things because you asked and you received. That would seem to indicate that she hears you. There's no question about it because that's more convincing than if you just took a random photo, and then there's an orb. But do we ever really know? No, I mean, we don't know for sure. We can never know for sure. There are so many different factors. We don't know what's going on in the other plane of existence. I mean, she could be doing all sorts of things. She could be any place in the universe. The resonance isn't right for her to get through to you, at a certain time. The thing that's interesting and concerning is, that this fear that you have. I mean, the question is, why would you be fearful if she's, coming through and trying to communicate with you? I mean, it's a visitation, really. Nothing to be fearful of unless you feel that somehow it's not her and there's, it's some other entity that's trying to get through. So, I mean, that's really the important thing here is, what's generating the fear?
Well, I saw an awful lot of those paranormal movies, and I refused to see any poltergeist movies. And when all of a sudden she broke the fourth wall, and she was there pounding on the door like it was a poltergeist, or there was an entity that came in through her portal, that scared the wits out of me. It's the third time she's gotten too close, and I think I've encouraged her too much with, praising all the different happenings that she does. And I think she's almost forgotten that she's a spirit and she forgot that she's dead and she thinks she's right there with me and she has permission to get absolutely close to me, and that just scares me.
Yeah. Well, it's all in the frame of mind. You said something, Melissa?
Well, hi, Steve. I'd like to know your involvement with Ghost Hunter Society. Your purpose is to communicate with ghosts or just learn more about them?
Oh, we sort of made a deal that when she had a familial illness and we knew she was going to die, and she did a lot of watching of ghost busting or ghost hunting movies, preparing herself to be able to communicate with me. So she wanted to stay in the house, and she wanted to be with me always. And mentally, I promised to her, you can be in this house forever, and we can continue what we can. So I feel good that I gave her three more years of life on Earth. And that's I'm figuring I can send her on her way now that she cannot understand that she's scaring me. I cannot get that across to her, and all I can think of is that I have to send her on away, and I don't know if I send her on her way, I don't know if she can hear that or not.
Oh, that's a tough one, Steve. You know, when people have told us about unwanted entities in their home, it was never a loved one or a former loved, you know, somebody that had had a physical relationship with them. But we do know that sometimes putting out a bowl of salt to help, you know, attract her energy there, and then discarding that to help give her a focus of something to help draw her out. I mean, that's just one method that I've heard of. But I think perhaps you ought to try to encourage her to come through to you in another way, either trying some electronic voice phenomena or through writing. Maybe she could guide you with some automatic writing and let her know you would like to be in communication with her, but in a peaceful way, one that's not so unsettling. Maybe, like Tom said, with your meditation, try to communicate too, soul to soul.
Yeah, ask her to come in for a dream visit, perhaps.
Actually, she did. I did have a dream 3 days ago in which I was going different places with her, and then she was lying there sweating and in fever, and then she died in the dream. And I thought, well, maybe that was her signal that she finally has moved on, because she doesn't usually appear in my dream.
Yeah, that's possible. And, you know, the power and the energy that they go on and run on is the love of the universe. And the opposite of love is not hate. The opposite of love is fear. So the last thing they want to do is make you fearful. So it's confusing that, you know, you're inviting her to come, and then she comes and says, hey, I'm here. And you go, oh, I'm afraid of you. So, you know, you're sending mixed messages. And I'm, you know, yes, you're absolutely right when you said, who's going to lie in bed at night and feel somebody next to them and not be afraid? It's easy to say, don't be afraid. But, yeah, the fear is confusing the matter. So if there's a way that you can be accepting, and especially when you know it's her, it's just like, hey, hi, how are you? I love you. You know, thanks for giving me a sign.
I think it's remarkable, too, that you made this your focus, the two of you, when you knew she was soon to pass, that there was going, you were hoping for some sort of communication. And who knows what abilities we'll have on the other side. But it sounds like she got really strong, has gotten really strong abilities to be able to come through to you like this.
Well, Steve, thanks for writing and for calling in. And I hope that your future interactions are loving and peaceful.
Okay, thank you.
Okay,
that was interesting. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Take care, Steve. Here's a question from Kelly. I'm interested in getting your views. From knowledge you have picked up from mediums and the like, it's about where spirits are allowed to go and how they're separated, if they are. I've heard that when a person crosses, they lose all their physical and mental illnesses. I've heard that everybody's happy, peaceful, living in a beautiful and serene environment. Then I've also heard from a medium that he sometimes has to be stern with the spirits who are around the one he wants to let come forward, because they will sometimes try to rush through, and that doesn't sound too serene at all. It sounds more like a frightening situation. Is this perhaps a place where spirits go to learn from or atone for their sins? I know you don't know all this stuff for sure, but you probably heard so much over the years. You have any ideas about this? So, yeah, I mean, I think that it's logical. I mean, we've talked about this before at some of our events and demonstrations and retreats. The mediums will tell us in these group settings that it's difficult because, you know, the signals are coming in from all, you know, all over the spirit world as you know, all the deceased entities are kind of lining up because they all want to desperately get through to their loved ones who are in attendance. I think we've told the story before. One of the mediums certified by the foundation, Joe Scheel, did an exercise where he was doing a demonstration in a group, and he told everybody seated in the audience to turn to the person next to them and start talking to them. And everybody did that, and within 30 seconds the drone was like deafening, you know. And then he said, welcome to my world, because this is what a medium goes through, you know, especially in a group setting. So I don't think that has anything to do with them not being in a peaceful or blissful or serene environment. I think it's just a desire to get through to their loved ones to let them know they're okay. And think about it. If you're not able to communicate and you're on the other side and you're having some difficulties and getting through to your loved one, and an opportunity presents itself, you're going to try hard to take advantage of that opportunity. That's my thought on that. I mean, you guys have some other thoughts on it?
No, I'm in agreement with you, Bob. What do you think, Tom?
Yeah, the thought about being happy all the time, I don't know if that's necessarily true. I think because I've heard the stories of especially the NDEers who are clinically dead, but they don't know they're dead. And we've heard of spirit, you know, some medium saying that the spirit doesn't know it's dead, and so it'll keep walking up and down in the hallway of the house where they were at. And we're talking about survival of consciousness, that a lot of people come back and you know it's them because they have the personality that they had when they were in the physical world. So spirit is individual in a sense. I mean, we're all connected. When we get to the other side, we're all one, basically. But there is individual personalities that are able to communicate. So I think that there are people who are different. And mediums will say, well, this one was a no-nonsense person, and they came right in and said, you got to talk to me. And so I'm talking to them now. And then the sitter will often, yep, that's my mom, all right. She was a tough one. So you do maintain some of that. But as we mentioned earlier, another observation from NDEers is that when they get to the other side, they're overwhelmed with the feeling of unconditional love. And if you're in an environment of unconditional love, it's hard to not, you know, to go back the other way, because you see it firsthand. I mean, on this planet, there are a lot of people who don't believe in any of that, and so they don't embrace it. So, but when it's surrounding you, it's hard not to. It embraces you rather than you having to embrace it.
Gary writes, my question pertains to the survival of consciousness after our passing. Is it believed or known that we retain our identity, our awareness of who we are and were, if you will, before crossing over? Can this energy become self-evident, or rather do we dissipate like evaporating water into the ether? It's an interesting question. You know, it reminds me that when I first started reading extensively to try to help with my grief, I started with books like the Tibetan Book of the Dead, you know, and I read some books about Buddhist philosophy. And I remember being troubled. That's not what I really wanted to be reading about then, you know, because, you know, the grief was so raw, and the notion that my loved one just blended into the ether was not helpful to me. I wanted to know that, you know, she still survived. Was she okay, and where was she? And certainly from our work with mediums, and if you go back to the researchers 100 years ago. I mean, like Frederick Myers wrote a book that, you know, survival of human personality, you know, after death, you know. And so it's talking about, you know, even then they knew that your personality survives, which means your identity survives and your memories survive. And from our work with mediums, we know that memories do, you know, survive physical death, because the mediums are bringing through information that only, you know, the sitter, you know, could have known, you know, obscure, you know, information. And we also know that sometimes the medium actually takes on the personality of the deceased entity that they're communicating with. So I think without a doubt, the answer to that question is, you know, yes, we have our identity and our awareness and our memories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's been I've seen that in plenty of readings where, you know, the discarnate, the loved one, will come back and apologize for something they did 20 years ago, right, that's still lingering in the as an issue for the person left behind. So they do remember that, and they not only do they remember things that happened while they were here, they remember things that happened after they passed, like weddings and births and things like that, that they will bring up. And yes, and absolutely, I've firsthand had readings where my loved one has come through, and more than what the medium was telling me, it was how it was being delivered. It was being delivered with the personality of my loved one, thinking, well, that's him, all right. Yeah, that's the way he would say it. That's, you know, the way he was, and that.
Okay, Myrta writes, I would like to know if our loved ones that cross to the other side can be spirit guides for their own family, or is it only for unrelated people, or perhaps being a spirit guide takes a long process that may not happen while the close relatives are still on Earth. What do you think about that? I mean, you know, the first part of it, can we have a spirit guide that was part of our own family? I don't see why not. I mean, I guess there's also the concept of reincarnation that comes into that equation. You know, I guess somebody could decide to stay and be a spirit guide, or return to the physical world. It might be a choice, you know. It seems to be a choice, you know, on that side. So why wouldn't you be a spirit guide for somebody in your own family, right? I mean, we might call them an angel, I mean, have different terminology, but I don't, you know, I think many people feel that their deceased family member is guiding them.
I agree. And yeah. I think love goes both ways, because we're grieving because we love them and they loved us, and they are still watching out for us and wanting the best for us. I know some mediums have said, there could be numerous guides for you, that some come and go. Some are ancient souls. Some can be family members. We really don't know. Sometimes it can be revealed to you in a deep meditation. You can ask. We've heard that you may ask, who are my spirit guides? Some people want to know their names. I guess that's like whatever your personality might be in this physical world, you just want to know. It doesn't really serve any purpose to know, really. Why assign a name to them? I've heard people have close misses with death, like a car wrapping around a tree and the person comes out completely unharmed, and they immediately think, I know my grandpa was with me. I just felt my grandpa was with me. So there is that, and wouldn't we all want to be that special guide for our loved ones?
Yeah, and the NDE is a good place to look for evidence, almost to a person having an NDE. they'll tell you that, oh yeah, and I saw my grandmother, I saw my father, I saw my best friend who had died 20 years ago. They were there when I crossed over. And if you want to, they're in spirit and they're guiding you to the other side. So they're literally spirit guides for that. But as also we mentioned earlier, maybe they're not as developed a spirit that you might have other spirit, highly developed spirits as your spirit guides, as they would say, that may not be family members. But I think family members are not only can be spirit guides, but are actively doing whatever they can on that side to make sure your life is fulfilling and happy.
Yeah, and you touched on this regarding, the question, maybe it's a long process that doesn't, happen right away. And a lot of the mediums will say that, they're spirit guides. They get the sense that, it's from hundreds of years ago, Right. So, I guess there are spirit guides that are old souls whose soul, I didn't mean that to be a pun, but the sole purpose in life or in the universe is to guide certain people. I mean, I don't know whether they're assigned, so to speak, to one person or 100 people, or I don't know how that works. But I think it, like you said, it goes both ways. Some people are more enlightened, because maybe from many lifetimes, and they could become a spirit guide very quickly after their physical death, and some might be what we would term to be ancients, So the thing about spirit guides is that, unlike mediumship, there's not any specific evidence that we can identify, right? Because people, they'll know the name of their spirit guide, and they might know about some, lifetimes that spirit guide had, but it's not like we could look it up, So that's more coming from the heart, than, with mediumship, we're all about the evidence. With spirit guides, it's all messages, so we can't really evaluate that, it comes with a knowing.
And I think it's, part of what I was saying about meditation is that you're basically keying in on the loving, powerful energy of the universe, and that might be a little too abstract for people, so they'd rather personify it, the energy of the universe. Somebody wants, they'll just call it God, and imagine a guy with a big white beard and and flowing gowns, and that gives them the anchor for which they can put their faith that yes, that exists. However, I believe that it's more of a just, you're part of the flow of the universe. And when you get into that flow, that's what's important. It's not that it's some, a person or an entity. It's just part of the flow.
Right. I mean, we're kind of out of time. I just wanted to just address this quickly. I mean, Rosa is another example where in the middle of the night while she was sleeping, she felt a very hard embrace, and it frightened her because it was a tight, embrace, and she was fearful, and she said she started praying and so forth. But I think that maybe our loved ones, in their strong desire to express their love, could be a little overzealous, I think that and then they would back off, and it never happened to her again. That maybe it's just that that hard embrace was an expression of love, and instead of being fearful of it, just accept it, think of it as a visitation. I mean, nobody's real. Your loved one's not going to do anything to cause you any harm. And with that, it's time I'll read our global peace prayer. Let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thought by praying like this to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time to say,
our loved ones really are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.